I'm Steve Norman reporting. Syrian state media reported a missile attack today on an air base in Homs province, blaming it on the U.S. military, U.S. denying that. Meantime, President Trump has blamed Russian President Vladimir Putin and Iran for what he said was a mindless chemical attack in Syria, at least 40 people dying. University of Pennsylvania Middle East scholar Ian Lustig tells VOA it was a surprise to see him mention Putin on Twitter.
Although it is the case that President Trump has a history of responding emotionally and strongly to pictures of dead children, and these videos that are coming out of Douma are just mind-numbingly horrible. And he probably saw them and reacted.
President Trump did not say how the U.S. might respond to the attack in eastern Ghouta. President Trump is predicting there will be a resolution to the U.S.-China standoff over tariffs, while senior economics advisor, the White House senior economics advisor, Larry Kudlow, tells Fox News Sunday trade tariffs against China are a must.
The whole world, please, the whole world knows China has been violating trade laws for many years, and President Trump is the guy calling them on it, and he's right to do so.
And the U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin told CBS the threat of higher tariffs poses a risk of a trade war, but he doesn't expect one. In Central African Republic, at least two people killed, dozens wounded, and an operation conducted jointly by UN peacekeepers and government forces. They targeted the Muslim PK5. This is VOA News. German police raided the homes of suspected members of a far-right group in Berlin and elsewhere searching for weapons. Markus Schmidt is a spokesperson for the German federal prosecutor. He said the objective of his encounter was to be able to coordinate action within the so-called Reichsbürger group. The objective of the group, he says, was to eliminate the state order of the Federal Republic of Germany. The raids were not linked to the incident in Munster on Saturday when a man drove a camper van into a group of people sitting outside a restaurant, killing two of them before killing himself. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban is celebrating what he calls a great victory for Hungary after his anti-immigration Fidesz party won a large majority in Sunday's parliamentary election. With almost all of the votes counted, Fidesz and its Christian Democrat allies are expected to wind up with 133 seats in the 199-seat parliament. In an acrimonious campaign, Orban portrayed himself as the savior of Hungary's Christian culture against Muslim migration into Europe. Eva Hegyas is a voter in Budapest.
The stakes are huge, huge. We will either become an immigrant country or we will stay free, or we will have to fight for remaining free.
Analysts say a strong win for Orban's one-issue campaign could expose cracks in the 28-nation European Union by boosting other right-wing nationalists in countries like Poland and neighboring Austria and bolster that Central European alliance against the EU's migration policies. Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim has announced during a visit to Afghanistan his country's support for an Afghan peace offer to the Taliban. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has offered an unconditional peace talk with the Afghan Taliban over a month ago during a Kabul process conference in the nation's capital, and he asked for a ceasefire. Turkey's call for peace in Afghanistan comes as the Taliban still maintains its silence and has yet to formally respond to the peace offer. The offer, that is, the Afghan High Peace Council, the body tasked with talking to the insurgents, said the Taliban might be mulling over a response. One U.S. official says North Korea has told the United States for the first time that it is prepared to discuss the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula when North Korean leader Kim Jong-un meets with President Trump sometime before May. Get more news at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, everyone. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's two main parties take a step to curb days of post-election violence.
The stakeholders of the All People's Congress Party, led by the presidential candidate, met with His Excellency the President, Richard Director Smarabio, for us to be able to look at incidences of violence so that we can enhance a very smooth and a very peaceful transition.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. Some Liberian journalists say they are under attack from supporters of President George Weah and the president himself. But the government says the journalists are crying wolf where there is no wolf. And South Sudan's government warns it might hold election if there is no peace deal with the opposition.
We can have elections if we so wish. There are so many countries in the world that held elections with a lot of insecurity, worse than South Sudan, and they did them.
Michael Makuye, South Sudan's Minister of Information, will look at transit centers in Niger to help African migrants and women of courage fight inequality and injustice. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's portion, our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Officials from Sierra Leone's two main political parties have met with President Julius Maada Bio to find ways to curb days of post-election violence. Since the inauguration of President Bio last Wednesday, there has been violence in Freetown and other parts of the country between supporters of the outgoing All People's Congress Party and the new ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP. Lahai Lawrence Lima, the National Publicity Secretary of the SLPP, says a committee comprising officials from both parties has been set up to deal with the violence.
The stakeholders of the All People's Congress Party, which was led by the presidential candidate of the All People's Congress, Mr. Samora Kamara, and the Secretary General and other members of the party, met with His Excellency the President, Richard Brigadier Smarter Bio, and executive members of the SLPP for us to be able to look at incidences of violence, because it is a system that we have inherited from them, a security structure that we have inherited. But at any rate, as a responsible government, we have been engaging with the sector we've inherited. We are dialoguing so that we can enhance a very smooth and a very peaceful transition process.
Whose idea was that? Was that President Bio? Or because there's been rumors in terms of which party was responsible for the violence.
The violence incident, actually, expectations have been that both parties have been looking forward to winning the elections. And because retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio pulled the highest number of votes and he was declared the winner. So that has actually left the APC membership in a discontentment, and of which they have actually been engaging in the disturbing the peaceful celebration of most of the members of the Sierra Leone People's Party and the Sierra Leone People's membership themselves, anchoring on the fact that they have won. They have been retaliating. That is the end of an interchange between. But again, also because the police have actually not been managing incidences around certain communities, in light of all of this, the president, retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio, who has actually said he's the president for all Sierra Leoneans, addressed yesterday a crowd of supporters and members of the SLPP, including members of APC themselves, who think that we should now come together and, as a result of the working committee, for us to be able to see how best we can chart the way forward.
What about the rumors that the new government has threatened to arrest some ministers from the previous government?
Well, actually, perhaps some people are actually scared of their shadow, but the president has actually not said that. In fact, he has said in very categorical terms that he is not here to witch hunt anybody. What he has even done is to set up a transition team of a very credible, high-profile people who have also served in various international and local capacities, who have their own reputation and integrity, that have formed up this committee to be able to enhance a very smooth transition. That is to have a status report as to what is the current state of affairs in the state governance, and to brief His Excellency the President, retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio. And from there, we have to take it over.
First of all, I saw a video of former President Ernest Bai Koroma in what I think was a criticism of the President Maada Bio and his government in terms of whether they are able to deal with the violence that is taking place. Has President Maada Bio been able to see this video? What does he make of that?
Whether he has seen the video, that is not to my knowledge, but he was privy of the fact that a video of this nature is going around. And when, in fact, the APC stakeholder came, he told them that, look, incidences of violence is something we have inherited. and it has been continuous, but the security sector have told me that situation is calm and quiet. If, of course, reports of violence is still coming on board, then it is the security sector we inherited from you, and that's why we are working on it. And so we have to come together and see how best we can set up a working committee to be able to actually meet these incidences of violence on the board.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. The editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print newspaper, says attacks on him and his paper by some officials of President George Weah's government may have the blessing of the president himself. Rodney Sear said he has been targeted because of articles the paper has written recently about President Weah building a new house just 2 months after coming to power and renovating another that has been dormant for years, as well as a resort. But Information Minister Eugene Nnabwe says President Weah's government is committed to a free press. Sear says President Weah and some of his supporters want journalists to practice patriotic journalism, even though journalists are not praise singers.
It all started, I believe it was last Thursday, when the mayor of Monrovia, Mr. Jefferson Koji, held a press conference to basically lambast our paper and myself, using a lot of irregularities and insinuating that we are extortionists and blackmailers because we've been exposing a lot of the stories against the government recently. As you recall, we published a few stories about the president building a new house just 2 months into office. He was renovating another building that was in dormant for years and was also renovating a resort that he owned prior to being senator. So we wrote those stories. We also talked about a loan that was in the works from Singapore, from an Asia conglomerate, a $536 million loan that they want to use to build the Southeast Road. And so the fact that we've been publishing these stories, I think, they really put a damper on the government. And so they feel that the way they can respond to it is to pretty much attack us personally.
You said the mayor of Monrovia referred to you and other journalists as extortionists. Why does he make that claim? Did you ask for any money from the government?
We have not asked for a penny. In fact, when they were in opposition, if you Google Front Page Africa and CBC or Jefferson Koji, you will see a lot of stories that we published when they made commentaries against the former government. When they made comments against the former government, we published a lot of stories when we did all those things that they were doing. And at the time, they did not complain that we were being blackmailers or extortionists. Now that they're in power, we're writing the same kind of story we wrote for Ellen Sirleaf. They're complaining that we are blackmailers and extortionists. I think it's a very disappointing trend in the media recently, especially in the wake of the harassment and departure of the BBC correspondent, Mr. Jonathan Pelele, of the U.S., and because he asked the president a question about the war crimes court in Liberia. So we don't know what's happening. We're very concerned about the developments that are taking place, and we feel strongly that, you know, things need to change.
Did you say, or did I read somewhere where some journalists believe that perhaps the government of President George Weah is looking for you, the journalists, to practice what, patriotic journalism? Is that correct?
Yes, we did an editorial on the weekend in which we kind of laid the ground basis, because the point is the government supporters are, and he and President himself are, calling us to be patriots. And our line of work, we are not patriots. We're journalists. We're being called unpatriotic because we're not singing the song of the government, because we're not praise singers, because we're not sycophants. And so they label us as unpatriotic. All we're trying to do is to make sure that the media in Liberia is strong, because the legislature is pretty much a rubber stamp. So the media is the last line of defense. And so that's where we risk our lives, we risk our paper, we risk everything to find out these issues, no matter who's in power. We want to make sure that the government is held accountable for everything.
Rodney Sear is the managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print newspaper. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 9th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The Liberian Minister of Information says President George Weah's government is committed to a free press. Eugene Nnabwe says the media is a critical component of Liberia's democratic dispensation. This comes after the editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online print newspaper, claims he is under attack by supporters of President Weah, spurred on by comments by President Weah himself. Another journalist, BBC reporter in Liberia, Jonathan Pelele, is currently in the United States fearing for his life due to what he said is repeated criticism of him by President Weah. But Information Minister Nambwe says some members of the media are crying wolf where there is no wolf. He accused some members of the media of allowing themselves to become political instruments.
We have not in any way attacked the press. In fact, to the contrary, we have encouraged the media to be the gatekeeper that it should be, to hold the government's feet to the fire, to serve as a conduit between the government and the governed. What is obtaining, Mr. Botti, is that some members of the media have allowed themselves to become political instruments. And when other politicians, you know, react to some of the falsehoods that they propagate, they now come and say that that's some form of a fight between the government and the media. It's not. Since the president took office over 2 months, there has not been any positive story from Mr. Sia. But that's his job as a journalist. He has a right to write whatever he wants to write. But there are individuals in the country who will also react to what he writes. That's the plurality of our democratic system. Freedom of speech also applies to people who are not members of the press. So how is that we have done nothing to stop Mr. Sia from doing his work? So there's no hindrance in the work of the journalists in Liberia. You know, we have a free press and that it will remain so.
So, Minister, you just mentioned that since President Weah took over, your government has not seen any positive press from Front Page Africa. Did your government ask the journalists, or do you prefer, as it has been reported, that you feel that these journalists to be patriotic journalists?
Nobody has said that. As the Minister of Information, I have not said that. There are tenets of journalism. There are ethical requirements. There are professional requirements. All we ask is that you stick to your own professional requirements. We have not policed the press in any way. We are not referees for the press. The press has its own ethical tenets, its own ethical requirements. So we just ask that they follow it. You know, but even if they don't follow it, the government will not move against them. We will do nothing to hinder the free press in Liberia. So in spite of the fact that some, and I'm being very specific, some of the journalists have decided not to follow their own ethical requirements, we still allow them to practice their profession unhindered, because that's the democratic disposition that we have.
As I was saying, I did speak with Rodney Sear, and I think he mentioned that this whole issue began to develop because of some critical articles, that stories that Front Page Africa has written and carried, particularly about President Weah, the government, some development projects, and some finances.
But we have a responsibility as a government to clarify some of the misinformation that his people have been publishing. Don't we have a right to do that? A major portion of our country since 1847, or perhaps 1822, the southeastern part of Liberia has been cut off. President Weah campaigned on the promise that when he becomes president, he will ensure that the road connecting Monrovia to the rest of the country is paved. So we are making moves to ensure that that happens. Mr. Sia said that's causing problems for the country. We say no. That's a healthy interaction, a healthy discourse. But is that intimidation of the press because you report a fallacious story and we react to it?
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Outrage, compassion, a desire for justice. These are some of the motivations of 10 women honored by the U.S. State Department this year with the International Women of Courage Award. Michael Sullivan spoke with several recipients at a recent stop in Los Angeles.
Honored in Washington, March 23rd, by First Lady Melania Trump, the women include Lamaluma Saeed, who was born into slavery, became a civil rights activist, and is now a deputy in the Mauritanian National Assembly. Some of the honorees came to Los Angeles, including one who works with the survivors of the massacres, rape, and torture in Kosovo in 1998 and 1999, when Yugoslav and Serb forces targeted ethnic Albanians suspected of supporting rebel fighters.
And the stories of the mother, the story of the girls, of children, of parents that I heard really affected me a lot. And sometimes I cried with them, I shared emotion with them.
She created a program to help refugees, especially women, offering them
psychotherapy, medical therapy, legal aid when it's needed, social support, as well as empowerment program, because majority of those women and girls, unfortunately, are living in extreme poverty.
The 1994 Rwanda genocide spurred another woman's efforts to bring the perpetrators to justice. Her husband and daughter were murdered, possibly because of her activism. She now works with rape victims and their children.
First, to identify them, and then to get them to become members of forums where they can meet together and deal with the trauma that they have been through.
A forensic pathologist from Honduras and a criminal lawyer from Kazakhstan work to bring justice to victims of sexual violence.
For Kazakh women, sex violence will be was as a taboo. And so it is important today speak openly about gender-based violence.
While old attitudes persist, she says her country has strong laws protecting those who speak out.
But many cases finished without suitable compensation for victims.
She's fighting to change that. The moderator of the Los Angeles Forum says these women inspire others to stand up against injustice.
Whether it feels small in comparison to what some of these women may have experienced in their lives in their countries. But when you suppress or silence women and girls anywhere, it has a dramatic impact on the entire globe.
And she says these women activists are having a global impact. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
South Sudan's government has again warned that it might consider holding elections if it is unable to reach a peace agreement with the opposition. Minister of Information Michael Makuei rejects any suggestion the government might be acting unilaterally.
We can have elections if we so wish, because South Sudan will not be the first country to hold elections meanwhile it is at war. There are so many countries in the world that held elections with a lot of insecurity, worse than South Sudan, and they did them. But what we are saying is that we will continue to pursue the revitalization process so that we can come up with an amicable solution, reasonable time frame that will lead to elections.
Can your government hold elections unilaterally without Riek Machar and his SPLA-IO?
What do you mean by unilaterally? Do you mean to say that we cannot run elections without Riek Machar? Is Riek Machar the person? Is he South Sudan? We can run elections without the opposition if we so wish. But we don't want to do it now. We want to continue negotiating with them until we reach an agreement so that when we go for election in an agreed time, we will go in for the election. But you cannot say, can you do it unilaterally? What do you mean by unilaterally? And how can you just make that fast conclusion that the government is saying we are going for elections?
I'm quoting you.
Quoting me, then quote me correctly.
Okay, but when you said the rebels are not negotiating in fair, I'm saying that there is intransigence on both sides. Your government is not willing to make concessions, so too the rebels. So the blame is on both sides.
That is a very unfortunate terminology to use. To say that the parties are intransigent is unfair and it's not acceptable. I said our position as a government is very clear, unless you are telling me that you hand over the government to the rebels. Otherwise, there is no reason for you to say the parties are intransigent. This is unacceptable.
I'm only saying that because your government and you particularly have said that the rebels are not negotiating in good faith, and therefore the government might consider going to election. I'm saying the last discussions or the negotiations,
by the way, don't misquote me and don't make very fast conclusions. When I say the government might think of going for elections, in other words, we are not saying the government will go for elections. And don't make fast conclusions out of statements which are, when you are quoting, quoting the correct.
Oh, I thought I quoted you correctly, Minister. I read the quote to you. The quotation was read to you.
I said might. When I said might or when I say may, it doesn't mean we will. There is a difference here.
So you are saying then there's no intransigence on the part of your government?
Well, the intransigence is your word. You are the one now terming us as intransigent. And I said this is unacceptable from a journalist like you. What is your criteria for determining whether a person is willing or not?
Well, I'm saying if two people are involved in negotiations and no one is willing to make concessions so that the process will move forward, then there is intransigence on both sides.
Then that is unfortunate because the government has put up a position paper. And then if you continue to say the government is intransigent, that is very unfortunate.
Michael Makwee, South Sudan's Minister of Information. You're speaking with me from the capital, Juba. It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the Paris Marathon, where Paul Loyangata led home a Kenyan 1-2-3 at the race on Sunday as he won the marathon for the second year in a row. The 25-year-old clocked 2 hours, 6 minutes, 25 seconds over the 42.195 kilometers course to beat Matthew Kisiroyo by 11 seconds and Ernest Ngeno by 16 seconds. In the women's category, Kenya's Betsy Saina crossed the line to win in 2 hours, 22 minutes, 55 seconds. Kenyan Ruth Chepngetich was second and Ethiopian Gulume Chala took third place. And now to the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast, Australia, where South Africa is leading other member African countries on the medals table. At the end of day 5, South Africa had 4 gold, 1 silver and 4 bronze medals to occupy the 7th spot on the overall medals table. They are closely followed by Uganda with 1 gold, occupying the 12th spot, while Mauritius occupies the 16th position on the medals table with 1 silver. They are closely followed by Kenya with 2 bronze medals, occupying the 22nd position. In women's football news, Harambee Starlets, the Kenyan senior women's soccer national squad, are through to the next round of the African Women's Cup of Nations qualifiers despite being held to a goalless draw by Uganda in Kampala on Sunday. Kenya are through on aggregate after winning 1-0 in the first leg at the Kenyatta Stadium in Machakos on Wednesday. Nigeria Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick has made excuses for Nigeria's Super Falcons' humiliating 8-0 loss to France in a friendly on Friday evening, saying the Federation put all of their efforts on the Super Eagles. In a statement, the Nigeria Football Federation president pointed out that the Super Falcons are still the best team in Africa and fans should not gloat over the results as it was a friendly that the coaches will use to correct the deficiencies in the team. Morocco will play Ukraine, Slovakia and Estonia to prepare them ahead of the 5th World Cup appearance in Russia. Javier Renat's side will square up against Ukraine and Slovakia on May 30th and June the 4th, respectively in Switzerland, before traveling to Estonia to take on Martin Rams' side on June the 9th. The Atlas Lions returned to the global stage for the first time in 20 years and have been paired with Iran and European heavyweights Portugal and Spain in Group B. Staying in North Africa, Tunisia forward Youssouf Mouskani will miss this summer's World Cup in Russia after being ruled out for 6 months because of a knee injury. The 27-year-old, capped 39 times, was injured during Al Duhal's 5-2 victory over Asselia in the Qatar Stars League on Saturday. Tunisia will face England, Belgium and Panama in Group G of the World Cup, which starts on the 14th of June. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Officials from Sierra Leone's 2 main political parties have met with President Julius Maada Bio to find ways of curbing days of post-election violence. A committee comprising officials from both parties has been set up to deal with the violence. And that's it for this Monday, April 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very productive week.
Hello, I'm Lee Normudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss some basic steps you can take to help you stay in good health when traveling. Our guest is Dr. Ken Red Cross, internal medicine specialist and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat. This Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.